As we come to the end of our Lenten season, I think that a lot of people have a great interest in what is the high point of the church's year. And today would be one of our most popular retreats of the year, where people take time out for the afternoon to prepare themselves, maybe just take a little time for reflection and to a little time of prayer, to prepare themselves for the great Triduum that's coming up. So during the day, we would look at the various elements of the Triduum. Of course, as you know, it's one long liturgy between Thursday evening and the vigil on Saturday night. So there's a beautiful, profound richness in that. And I think that we're not observers of this, but we really want to be participators in this whole liturgy as well. And I think in doing so, it's a profound journey we're invited on. The more we encounter that and allow it to be part of us, I think it's a very beautiful, transformative experience as well, really entering into the forgiving love of the Lord. And I suppose most of all, showing us how to hold on to our humanity, even in the midst of suffering in life today.
And I mean, that's probably a big theme for a lot of people, because a lot of people may feel that they are going through their own journey of suffering.
Yes, and I think that we just have to be careful, I think, about what we call the cross in our lives today. Many people see every suffering as the cross. But really, I think that as we reflect more deeply on the meaning of the cross in our lives, I think that it's really about that transforming suffering that brings us into new life. I know many people kind of blame the cross on everything. If they have a headache or they have a sickness, that they consider that to be the cross. And of course, we can bring those illnesses to the cross to give it meaning. But really, I think as far as Jesus was concerned, when he was asking us to take up the cross and to follow him, there was really an implication there that these were disciples who were utterly free. They were people who were able to give themselves freely in their life to the Lord. And also that today we talk very much about the symbolism of that day, of the passion of Christ, which really I think is the passivity of Christ in a way, because it's not that Christ is doing, but Christ allowed himself that vulnerability to allow, I suppose, us to have control in his life. And he did this in order to show us, I suppose, how we transform that suffering in our life to bring new life. And I think some of our feminist theologians, and especially scripture scholars today, have brought out for us the birthing image of the passion, where when Jesus' side was lanced, that poured out blood and water, both life-giving and cleansing. But it's also a beautiful and profound birthing image. And of course, the Lord himself used that when he talked about suffering in another part of the gospel, when he talked about that when a mother gives birth to a child, there is pain, that the pangs of birth is there. But then when new life comes, the pain is forgotten because they are so glad that new life has come. And I think that's really an important element as well of our Triduum, that yes, there is suffering and Christ took up the cross, but the Gospels never emphasized so much on the suffering, but rather the fact that new birth was coming, and it was really the resurrection that transformed this. So I think it's a beautiful way of seeing that Jesus freely chose the cross because he saw it as the way in which to complete his forgiving love all through his ministry. He was one who wanted to bring us life and bring it to the full. And I suppose the ultimate sacrifice he made was to sacrifice that life to show us the gift of this. So one of the things I'm emphasizing during this week as well, especially in the area of passivity, that many older people, particularly when the zest of life or the energy of life is beginning to wane, I think the cross helps us and the passion helps us to recognize that we can be so fruitful even when we have to hand our life over to others to care for us. And it gives meaning to that beautiful end of life where we too have to hand over our energy or our control. And we also may have to end into that passivity of life where we don't see maybe the immediate fruits of the work that we are doing, but that we enter into that beautiful place of having to let go. And very often, I've known from our own older members of our community here, that very often retreatants will talk about the older man who just comes to prayer every day, who would have the energy of maybe what his ministry was like 30, 40 years ago. And yet the witness in that can be profound. And very often we see that in those situations that maybe the fruitful part of our life can always come, maybe in that passivity part, that end part of handing over our lives to one another.
You raised an awful lot of interesting points there. And I mean, having been through the labour process twice myself, I can definitely see an analogy there between the sort of death and resurrection that exists in the natural process of life. And it's also, I suppose, no coincidence that Easter is around the time of spring, which is also a time of death and resurrection. And, you know, Thomas Kinsler wrote quite well in his poem, you know, about how the fruit trees are cut down for better bearing and all of that. Yes. So is it all part of that idea that we do have to cut back, we do have to trim down, we do have to suffer, in a sense, yes, to bear greater fruit?
Yes, absolutely. Well, we've just come out of the winter season and now we're into the spring, and we see, of course, that nature was asleep, really, during the winter months. And now we see new signs of life and new buds of life coming everywhere around us today. And I think that we've also come out of the Lenten season. We're coming to the end of the Lenten season, which really is a time of preparation, of allowing ourselves through fasting, through prayer and through almsgiving to prepare ourselves and to, in a way, I suppose, to prune back our own self-centeredness, to check our own ego in all of this. So there is certainly a pruning that takes place during that period. And then, I suppose, it comes to the climax of those 3 days then at the end, which, I suppose, in a sense, brings the whole thing to completion. The death, the waiting, and then the signs of new life that's coming up. And I suppose one of the things we have to remember as well, that on Easter Sunday morning, we don't go to the tomb to see resurrection, because there was nobody there when the resurrection took place. But I think what brought life to people was their profound encounters with the risen Lord after this. So really it's trying to find those places that are life-giving for us, and where we can find either through prayer or through ritual or through even discovering God in the ordinary events of everyday life, of discovering where this new life may be inviting us again. What do we need to shed? What do we need to let go of in order to embrace this new life? So I think it's really a profound journey in a miniature. Our whole life is summed up in those particular 3 days. And I know when I was in our own formation communities over the years, I found those 3 days profoundly formative for candidates we had in community. It was probably the most profound and changing experience for many of them. So I've always found that if we really enter into this, we'll discover new life in it, and we'll see how profound the love Jesus has for us. It's a beautiful thing to look, especially when you look at the crucifixion scene, and ask yourself, who are the most human in that situation? And you have Jesus, who was suffering on the cross, who is sensitive to his mother's need of making sure she was looked after. Also in his pain to recognize that the good thief on the cross, that you will be with me in paradise, that he held that. And of course, ultimately then saying to the Father, because he wasn't able to forgive them because he was still on the cross, but he prayed to the Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do. So in that situation, he held a most profound humanity and kept his identity there. Then, of course, we have also the image of Our Lady standing at the foot of the cross. And again, we see that she also had to embrace something that she didn't have control over. But I think she mirrored there and gave the strength with Jesus to witness to that profound humanity of being able to grieve, but also to hold the dignity and to hold the love that Christ had in his heart. I think she kind of was there to support that and to witness that as well at the side of the cross.
It's also a very gruesome story. You know, I mean, when you're retelling it, it sounds really gruesome that you'd have had this person hanging up there from the cross, dying slowly, having their side cut and everything. I mean, everything about it, and even just the humiliation leading up to it. And we sort of forget that because we hear the story every year. But Even when you think about Mel Gibson's film, you know, it sort of brought it back that this was a very visceral, very gruesome, very awful experience.
Yes, and of course, it was probably the ultimate humiliation for people in Jesus' time, that it was the poorest of the poor were crucified, and it was probably the most agonizing of deaths, going from a few hours to even days, we are told, that people have suffered on this. So the gruesomeness of life, and I suppose the brokenness of life, is really shown there. And and I suppose one of the areas of it, I was in the Holy Lands a couple of years ago, and leaving the upper room and just looking over the Kedron Valley, you have the desert on the right-hand side. You have Bethany straight ahead, and then you have the Garden of Gethsemane on the left-hand side. So in a way, Jesus had the freedom at any time to say, I'm not going to, he could have escaped this. But I think that his agony in the garden and his saying yes to this suffering, in a sense, was a way in which he really embraced the sufferings of human nature. And he took it on so powerfully and carried it with such dignity, in a sense also, that I suppose that it's a help to us to make sense of our own sufferings as well. And that he really understood what terrible suffering was. He was a victim of the greatest of injustice, recognized, I think, even by the thieves that were beside him, recognized this. So I think in a way that the fact that he took on our humanity to such a profound depths, I think, helps us. But it doesn't in any way take away from the gruesomeness of this. And I think that in a world where we find such inhumanity and people suffering around the world, I think that we still are horrified and we are still profoundly shocked. And I think that's right for us, because I think if we cease to be shocked by this, then we've lost a profound part of our humanity. So we always will be utterly shocked, and we're entering into a mystery that we'll never be able to fathom completely. But just to knowing that the Lord walked this with us and has been there before us, it can be a place of consolation for us, even to the point of feeling that the Father had abandoned him on the cross when he cried out, my God, why have you forsaken me? So that was probably the deepest of feeling of abandonment. And I think for most people who are going through very difficult times, the feeling of being abandoned is probably the most profound suffering of all, are to feel that there is nobody that can understand what I am going through. And I think that maybe in a sense Christ is an answer to that for us, that we know from his experience that he knows what people are going through in that particular stage.